Wow, you'd think they were running the Preakness today. That was Reinhard Goebel and the Musica Antiqua Cologne taking Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 at an invigorating clip.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn here at Henry Ford Community College, and thank you for tuning in either on 89.3 FM on your radio dial or WHFR.FM on the internet. Thank you for tuning in, whichever way you are. The wonderful association of the Dearborn Orchestral Society, also known as WADOS, cordially invites you to an enchanted evening. Enjoy a special home tour with hearty hors d'oeuvres, yummy desserts, fine wines, and other refreshments of their first 2008 showcase home this Saturday, May 17th, from 7 until 11 p.m. at the beautiful home of John Matthews on Belmont in Dearborn's exclusive Golden Triangle. Reservations per person, $50. Now, they are limited to 75 reservations, so you're going to want to get yours today. For information, call 313-565-2424. Enjoy.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and as the name of the show implies, for the next hour, we will be speaking about all things metaphysical. And my special guest today is Leslie Riznick, and she is a tarot card reader. She's also a Reiki practitioner, but today we're going to be speaking about tarot cards primarily, and something that's new to this show. We are doing it live. In the past, we've always taped it, but like I said, today we're going to do it live. And we're going to see how it goes. It just depends on my guest, and we'll see how that works. Nothing like a little pressure first thing in the morning, right? And good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
That's good. That's good to know that. And let's get into tarot cards. How did you get started reading tarot cards?
I've been reading tarot for probably 20-some years. I know I'm dating myself that way. But I was on a trip and met somebody who read tarot cards, said I was always interested in having my cards read. We struck up a friendship, and he sent me some cards and some books, and we were off and running, and he helped me learn how to read tarot, and from there I got into a few other things, including Reiki.
Mm-hmm. So do you enjoy doing the tarot cards? You've done it for many years, right?
Yes, I have. I've done it for many years. I've done parties. I've done individual readings. I initially started reading the tarot more as personal reasons, as a guidance tool. And tarot is simply a divination tool that allows you to determine what path you're on and whether the path that you're on is the right one for you. So when you get a tarot reading, it's not necessarily the way things are going to be, no questions asked, or at least that's the way I interpret the tarot. And that's why if someone gets a not so great reading, it doesn't necessarily mean that these things will definitely happen to you. It's more saying, if you keep on the path that you're on and keep making the kinds of decisions that you're making, this is likely where you're going to end up.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing set in concrete, right?
I don't believe that. I know others do, but I believe that everyone has the power to change their lives for the better.
Mm-hmm. So, again, you're just making suggestions primarily?
Typically, what you do when you do a tarot reading is you interpret the past, you look at what's happening in the present, and tell them what's likely to happen in the future. Tarot can be very specific, or it can be more general. There are people, for instance, when I had my first reading done, the man who had not known me was spot on with things about my family, things about what was going on with me personally in the present. And he also was very specific and said, on or about September 19th, you'll receive an incredible opportunity. And as it so happened, exactly on that date, September 19th, I received a really great job offer and started a new job. So it can be very, very specific, or it can be more general. And some of it depends on the person that you're actually reading.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you have a certain psychic ability, though, that kind of kicks in whenever you give a reading?
I think it's developed quite a bit more as I've gotten older and as I've started looking at different ways of looking at life and different ways of practicing. Like, for instance, Reiki, I think, has helped tremendously with my tarot reading. It's made me more sensitive to people and their issues and what have you. And I think that everyone, just like with Reiki, everyone has the capability to do this. Some people are more gifted than others, but everyone has a capability to do it. And a lot of it is just believing in it and believing that it is something that has some credence. It's not just a parlor game. And, you know, if someone believes that it's just a parlor game and they're open to having their cards read, as long as they have that belief, they typically get a pretty good reading. And if someone has no belief whatsoever, I typically can't get a good read on them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just mainly the person that you're reading actually puts their energy into the cards, and that's what influences how the cards lay out, not you. You're simply a medium, not in the sense of someone who would necessarily communicate with the dead, but you're simply the medium for their reading.
Mm-hmm. So you're more or less a conduit, is that it?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So when you found out that you got this job on the date that this person told you, is that when it all clicked in and said, wow, there is really something to this?
Well, actually, when he first did my reading, I felt that there was something to it because he was so spot on with my family history, my personal things that were going on in my life at that time. And we talked quite a bit. He was really an incredible person. I still keep in contact with him from time to time. But he jumps all over the country. He worked for, believe it or not, he worked for the Department of Defense as an artificial intelligence. So he was quite a bright man, and he and his wife were both into a lot of interesting metaphysical things. Mm-hmm. And I haven't actually seen him in 20-some years, but we've kept in contact through email and phone calls.
Mm-hmm. So was he kind of a mentor to you at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think he really opened my eyes to a lot of different things, not just the tarot, but different ways of looking at things and the universal consciousness and those kinds of concepts that make us appear more as part of a whole, rather than standing on our own and having to struggle in life. And around that time is when I started to explore more outside of my upbringing. I was raised in a traditional religious family, not strict religious, but we went to church every Sunday, and I'd never quite felt comfortable in that place, and I always felt like something was missing. And this was one of the things that really opened my mind up to exploring different things.
Mm-hmm. So you were never really attracted to traditional religion?
I never felt like I belonged. I always felt that there was something broader out there, and I was always attracted to earth-based religions, the Native American religions and what have you. And as a matter of fact, in addition to the tarot, there's other cards out there, for instance the animal medicine cards that are supposedly based on Native American traditions, and I do have a deck of those, and I've used those as well, and that's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. So when you give a reading, what do you look for first?
Well, typically, I don't walk up to a stranger on the street and say, well, hey, can I read your tarot cards? Yeah.
Hi, you don't know me, but.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So typically, someone will come to me. And a lot of times, it's friends. Sometimes, it's people that heard about me through someone. Sometimes, I'm at a party and I'll just pull my cards out. As a matter of fact, that's how I ended up on this show. I happened to be at a party and had my cards with me and started reading doing one reading, and before I know it, 3 hours later, I'm still sitting there doing readings. But so it's kind of interesting. What they do is they come to me, and typically it's more out of curiosity. A lot of times it's just more out of curiosity, and they say, oh, I've never got my cards read. I've always wanted to have it done. You know, will you read my cards? Mm-hmm. So I'll sit down, and depending on how much time I have, there's really two different layouts that I use. There's a whole bunch of different things. There's the Tree of Life. There's a standard layout. And then there's like a three-card layout, which I call a quickie.
Oh, really? Like quickies, too? I don't want to get too personal. But.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that later,
okay,
Mike.
All right. But anyway, generally speaking, you give a pretty much detailed reading for most people?
If there's the time, if someone's actually paying me, I'll typically give them the more detailed reading.
Yes, that's very important, right?
Yes, it is. But a quickie reading might take 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes. A full reading using the full layout, past, present, and future. You have several cards for each. I can take anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour, depending on how much I'm actually getting from the person and what kind of questions. Typically, they don't tell me their questions beforehand, and mm-hmm. I prefer it that way. And I tend to be able to read people I don't know a little better than people I know because I don't have any preconceived notions about what they're like.
Right. Well, not only that, but you might have a vested interest in what happens to that person also.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you give yourself readings?
I do. I do. Not all the time. Sometimes if I'm bored, I might give myself a reading. Or if I'm struggling with a particularly difficult decision or emotional issue. I lost my mom not too long ago, back in December. And I haven't really turned to the cards so much as doing the Reiki and the meditation has helped quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But if I have decisions to make regarding things in relation to that, sometimes I'll turn to the cards to give me guidance, not to tell me what to do. I never turn to the cards to tell me what to do. It's more give me some guidance on which direction I should move in.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you can be objective enough to give yourself a proper reading?
Not always. Mm-hmm. Not always, to be perfectly honest. If I'm really, really struggling and if it's a real deep emotional issue, it's sometimes difficult to be objective. The same kind of principle applies when reading friends. Not necessarily being objective enough. And like you said, if I have a vested interest in it, you tend to lean to one side or the other.
Right. I guess the positive side is the side you'd be leaning towards. You don't want to delve into the negative at all, right?
As far as tarot readings?
Yes.
I don't like to use the word negative. There are cards in the deck that represent forces that may not give people the outcome that they're hoping. And cards like Death and the Tower and the Devil, they look very scary. They typically have explosions and people falling off buildings and
yeah, not good.
Things like that. But they don't necessarily mean bad things. There's mm-hmm. not a whole lot of cards in the tarot deck that definitively mean something bad.
Right. I just want to take time out right now to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And my special guest today is Leslie Riznick. And she is a Reiki practitioner along with a tarot card reader. And we're speaking primarily about tarot cards today. Now, you said that sometimes cards come up that might seem negative, but I know that sometimes when the Death card comes up, it can just mean change. Is that correct?
Exactly. If you think about anything in life, in order for something to be born, something else has to die. Not to get too graphic, but of course you have the egg and the sperm. And in order for a baby to be born, that egg and that sperm have to die as separate entities and come together to form something else. So death is simply about transformation and rebirth.
Right. So it could mean somebody is going to go into a new job.
Exactly.
A new life situation, perhaps get married.
Exactly.
So those things are positive, yet it might be interpreted as a negative card initially.
Exactly. And that's why when you're getting a tarot card reading done, you should wait for the person who's doing the reading before you jump to conclusions. Because a lot of times people will see a card like that come up and they'll just have a little bit of a stress there.
Right. They don't want to hear what you have to say. Is that correct?
Well, and that's sometimes that's the challenge. And typically when I do a reading, if someone has not had a reading done before, and if they don't understand the tarot, I will take a few minutes to explain how the tarot card, how the tarot deck is put together and what the different cards mean. And if you'd like, I can kind of go into that right now.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Don't let me stop.
The tarot deck has 78 cards, or the typical tarot deck. I should mention that through history, the tarot deck has had as many as 120 cards. And a lot of it just depends on what the person who's done the deck, who's designed the deck, has how they've interpreted the tarot. But today's tarot decks typically have 78 cards. And that includes 22 major arcana, and I'll explain what the difference between the major and minor arcana are, and 56 minor arcana. Now, 56, as you notice, is right next to 52, which is how many cards we have in today's playing deck, at least here in the States. And that's not a coincidence. Today's playing deck, playing cards, came out of the minor arcana. The minor arcana has four suits, just like our playing cards do, and they have ace through 10, and they also have four court cards as opposed to our deck of cards has three court cards. So in the in today's playing cards, we have diamonds, which corresponds to the suit of pentacles, which is a suit of money. We have hearts, which correspond to the suit of cups, which is a suit of love. We have clubs, which corresponds to the suit of wands, which is a suit of enterprise, distinction, business. And we have spades, which is a suit of which corresponds to swords, which is a suit of conflict and distress and things like that. So the minor arcana gives you those same things except king, queen, knight. I'm sorry, jack, queen, king is page, knight, queen, king.
And that's it? Or is there more?
Well, as far as the minor arcana, that's kind of the brief explanation that I give. But the major arcana is actually the more interesting part of the deck. The major arcana has 22 cards, and it actually represents man's spiritual journey. So in the Rider-Waite deck, which is the deck that I typically use, and is considered kind of the standard deck for most readers and things that people would typically use. Sorry, I got distracted there. Mike was writing
That's
me
all
a
right.
note.
Yeah, so now that you said that, okay. Go ahead anyway. It's just our secret, though.
Yeah, I have a hard time multitasking here. So the major arcana starts with a fool in the Rider-Waite deck. And over the years, over the centuries, actually, there's been a lot of discussion and a lot of debate about where the fool should be. The fool represents the beginning. In some decks, people consider it the end because an end is simply a different beginning. Mm-hmm. And it goes through your struggle in finding your spiritual path, and then it transforms from the fool, it goes to the magician, the emperor, the empress, the high priestess, the hierophant, and goes all the way up to the world, which is the culmination of the major arcana. When I do a reading, if I have a lot of major arcana come up in the reading, it usually means that someone doesn't have a lot of control over the things that are going on in their lives. They're being influenced by outside forces or what have you. So in that case, what some practitioners do is when they have that happen, they pull out all of the major arcana and they do a reading just with a major arcana. I may or may not do that depending on how much time I have with a querent. By the way, querent is the word that we typically use to refer to the person that's asking the question. Query, querent. So,
okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Okay, so now when you do a reading, I guess what I want to know right now is, you say the Fool, is that comparable to the Joker in a regular deck of cards?
Actually, you're absolutely right. The Fool, because the Fool has in the Rider-Waite deck is a zero, is card number zero, you're absolutely right. That's kind of what people say the Joker kind of evolved out of, is the Fool. And we typically use the Joker as a card to fill in if we lose a card, or something that's a wild card in Game of Crazy Eights or whatever. But the Fool is a little bit less of a wild card and more of something that actually grounds the deck, is what I like to think of it. Because it really is. And let me, if I may, read from the book. I have a book by the title of The Complete Guide to the Tarot by Eden Gray. And it talks about the symbolism on each of the cards. And as you learn the tarot, you find that having a description of the symbolism and having being able to look at the card, it actually helps you to remember the meanings of the cards. As you learn to read the tarot, you'll get to know the meanings of the cards just without having to refer to the symbolism. So that's the great thing about the Rider-Waite deck, is it has so much rich symbolism. And when you look at a tarot deck, it has symbolism not just from, people think it's all occult. You know, they see the pentacles and they think, right, oh, you know, witches and what have you. And many people refer to it as being a cult, but many people don't realize there's Egyptian symbolism, there's Christian symbolism, there's Kabbalah, Judaism, there's astrology. And it's really incredible the breadth of areas that the tarot covers and what it pulls from.
Well, isn't it also tied into numerology as well?
Absolutely. And if you're a numerologist, that I'm not, but if you're a numerologist, that can really enhance your ability to read the tarot. And as a matter of fact, numerology is one way of being able to read the tarot deck to predict dates. So if I may read from this book about the Fool. Here we have a youth about to step off the edge of a precipice. He symbolizes the life power before it enters into manifestation. And we see a young man dressed in a very elaborate costume, and these were done around the beginning of the 20th century, so around 1900s or so. And so the symbolism is kind of medieval. And we have somebody who's got a stick over their shoulder with, what do you call the little knapsacks that hang off the hobo bag?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's a sun behind him that's rising. It's still rising. The spiritual sun never reaches its zenith. If it did, it would descend and decrease in power. The wand over the youth's shoulder is a symbol of the will and is tied to a wallet that is thought to carry universal memory and instinct. The sign of the eagle is on the wallet, and it speaks of strength and is associated with the zodiac sign Scorpio. The youth carries a white rose, indicating that he is still free from animal forms of desire. The little white dog at the young man's heels might mean that man has evolved from the wolf, the lower forms of life elevated and improved, and also that nature is glad to follow along in man's wake. So that's just a little snippet from that description, but the cards are quite beautiful, and Mike can attest by looking at the cards here and see the colors are very bright, and they're very, very vivid and very easy to read. As a matter of fact, here's the Fool right now.
Right. Well, like you said, though, there's a lot of different symbols, right? I mean, each picture in the card might represent something different.
Exactly. If we have water in the card, it typically represents the consciousness. If we have a white rose, that typically represents pure thought. Red roses represent fertility, whether it's fertility of reproduction or creativity. A fish typically will represent creativity. In the Page of Cups, it's quite a humorous card because he's holding the cup and there's a fish poking its head out of the cup. And it's quite interesting, like I said, how many different places that the symbolism pulls from. As a matter of fact, when you read about the history of the tarot, one of the schools of thought, again, there's just so many different interpretations of how the tarot came about, that it's thought that when the Crusades came through and they wiped out all these different mystical organizations and beliefs, that the tarot was possibly created in order to pull those beliefs forward. And you can see that there's different things relating to masonry. There's different things relating to the Kabbalah and plenty of other mystery type organizations whose information has been lost over the years.
Mm-hmm. And just very briefly, I want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is called Metaphysically Speaking. There, I'll get it out. My name is Mike Holloway, and my guest today is Leslie Riznick, and she is a tarot card reader, also a Reiki practitioner. But today we're talking about tarot cards. Now, how long have tarot cards been around?
Centuries. Yes.
How many centuries? Do you know?
Well, most people say at least 700, 800 years.
Mm-hmm.
The first example of tarot cards in Egypt is around the 12th century or so. And the first evidence of the first actual tarot cards that we have outside of Egypt and actual cardboard cards, sometimes they were made of gold or ivory or what have you. I think it was probably in the 1600s where they actually finally came up with a cardboard type card, but they were hand painted. Some of them were printed with wooden blocks. And that first deck, I forget the name of the deck, but it's thought to be in private hands, although you can find representations of it on the web and purchase different decks related to that, is around 1363, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back quite a few centuries.
Yes, right. Now, over time, do the symbols that are on those cards, are they just added by people as they go along?
Absolutely. You can go on the web or you can walk into any bookstore and you'll find, if not dozens, hundreds and hundreds of different decks. And there are a lot of decks try to stay true to the types of imagery that's represented by the Rider-Waite deck.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the woman who did the artwork for this, and I don't know how many millions of decks have been sold, Rider-Waite decks, but the woman who did the artwork for the decks was well known in her day, but has pretty much fallen into obscurity since then. And she a lot of times doesn't get recognition for the work that she did on the deck. But there are Egyptian decks. I happen to have an Egyptian deck myself. There are decks that are based for children that are based on fairy tales. There's just anything you can imagine. There's a Native American decks, and they don't necessarily use the same symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
And they may even have different interpretations of cards. There's so many different ways of reading the cards. Some people will assign different meanings to a card if it's in the reverse position, meaning upside down. Other people will read the cards the same no matter how they turn up.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to go along the belief that if the card turns up in the reverse position, naturally it means something different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've even seen decks that are relate to baseball in regards to the tarot, so there's a lot of different types, like you said. Now, when you're giving a reading, I usually ask this of my guests that are psychics or tarot card readers or whatever, and you do come up with something that you might perceive as a bit of trouble for somebody. Do you mention that to that person?
That's a moral and ethical dilemma of someone. It really depends on what it is. And I try to give them a hint of something. But again, it's not definitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an absolute. In my mind, the tarot is simply a guidance. So I did have, I have a couple of incidents where something like that has come up. One in particular, I had brought my cards to a Halloween party, and I was reading cards for a woman I didn't know. She was a friend of the host. And she, I did a quickie reading, a three-card reading, and I got that she was going to have a miscarriage.
Was she pregnant at the time?
Not that I knew. I did find out later that she was pregnant. She had just gotten pregnant. She did miscarry, but then she later went on to have a healthy baby. So you have to be careful. When I talked to her about that, I said, I think she told me that she was trying to get pregnant. And so it was interesting that this card came up. And I just tried to say, just make sure you eat right, make sure you take care of yourself, and understand that sometimes, I don't remember exactly what I said, but you have to be very careful, because if you tell somebody something extremely negative, and since I don't consider it absolute, they can sometimes talk themselves into something like that.
Right. Well, not only that, but that would make the person paranoid about where they go, what they do, like you said, what they might eat, anything like that.
Exactly. And I always, always tell, especially if someone has potentially a negative card come up, I always tell them, remember that this isn't necessarily where you are going to end up. This is where you're headed based on the actions and the things that you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. If you really felt, though, by a reading that a person was going to be in a serious accident or get a serious illness, would you mention something directly?
Yes. Well, that the serious illnesses tend to come up more with my Reiki. And I have been able to detect that kind of thing. And typically people don't listen to you, but usually it'll come up later. And it doesn't happen often, but when it has happened, it's been accurate. But accidents, yes, I had another reading I did for a friend of mine who was going to the Port Huron to Mackinac race, and the shipwreck card came up, and they almost shipwrecked. They had, it was a huge storm. I don't know how many years ago this was, but there was a huge storm, and they almost capsized. So you have to believe, because there's too many things for it to not just be coincidence.
Right, but I'm sure, like you said, you're a little leery about mentioning it, because nothing is in concrete.
Exactly, and I did talk to him about that. I said, just be careful that you make sure that you, if you do get involved in a situation, that you take all the safety precautions and don't try to be a hero trying to win this race.
Right, just take it as it comes, right?
Exactly.
Now, what kind of pattern do you normally use if you're going to give a full-blown reading, so to speak?
I use something called the Celtic Cross. And if you'd like,
okay, you're gonna do an impromptu one right now.
Yeah, or? I can do. Okay. I can do an impromptu Celtic Cross. But okay. what the Celtic Cross is it's 10 cards. I'm gonna try to shuffle here a little bit quiet. So
oh, okay, well no, that's all right. We know that you're shuffling cards. Now this is what most tarot card readers use, this pattern.
Everybody's different. This is considered one of the standard patterns, and I think most tarot card readers probably know how to use this. But there are actually readings that where you can use the entire deck, and different people do different things. A lot of people have the people that they are reading shuffle the deck. Sometimes the deck takes on the personality of. Not the personality necessarily, but it takes on the energy of the reader. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that's recommended when you get a new deck is to sleep with it under your pillow so it can get your energy.
Really?
And it did seem to make a difference, whether it was power of suggestion or what have you. But I typically don't have my people shuffle the deck. I'll have them cut the deck. So I'm going to ask you to cut the deck twice. Okay,
that has been done now. It's been cut twice.
And the first card you lay down in the Celtic Cross is the card that covers you. Sometimes I will take a card that represents that person. The court cards, depending on which suit they are, can represent a different type of physical appearance of a person. I don't always do that, though. So your first card is the Two of Swords, and it has a woman sitting on a bench in front of a sea with islands, and she's blindfolded and has her arms crossed with swords in them. Not necessarily a bad card.
Okay.
It is a swords, but it means more that you've kind of got your blinders on about something, and you're not really being realistic.
Go ahead.
The next card we lay down is what crosses you. So basically you're forming a cross with these two cards. And that is the card that is going for or against you on as far as the kind of having your blinders on is concerned. And that's the Queen of Cups. Queen of Cups is a very, very rich card. And again, the cups is a suit of love. So this probably represents someone, a woman, or someone with feminine tendencies. Yeah, so
I was going to say, it sounds like one of my old girlfriends with the swords and everything.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, yeah, don't make me go there. Okay. So we've got the Queen of Cups. It's a very lush, it's a very rich card. Again, cups is a suit of love. So this probably means someone in your life, probably fair-skinned or fair-haired, who is very much a support to you, and that this person gives you advice you don't always listen to. And afterwards, she may not say, I told you so, but you may say, darn, I should have listened to her. And then the next card that, oh, here we go. The next card we have that comes up is something that represents the far past, something like 6 months in the past or further in the past, and that's death. And remember, death is simply transformation.
Right, right.
And that's actually in the reverse position. The reverse position usually means something different than in the upright position, but not always. Sometimes it can mean the opposite. Sometimes it means something slightly different. In this case, I think what this represents for you is something that kind of something that started but didn't quite take off. So you had some business venture or some kind of project that is kind of stagnated. And I think that it's probably still out there and you can get it going again, but it's right now it's kind of dead.
Dead in the water.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, now we have the near past, which is an influence that is just passing out of your life. And you'll see, as I lay these cards out, you'll see that it, well, obviously the listeners won't be able to see, but Mike, you'll be able to see that. Yes. It forms a cross. So, and that's judgment. That's another major court card. So probably what this means is whatever was going on here in the past, you didn't have much control over. We've got two major arcana in these positions. And I won't spend too much time on the cards because I know our listeners might get bored knowing what your life is all about. They want to know right. What their life is all
exactly,
about.
Exactly, right.
The next card that I lay down represents the far future. It's the Ten of Staves or the Ten of Wands, and it represents somebody carrying a burden. So we'll just leave it at that for now. And another major arcana, the moon. The moon represents intuition. This is your near future, something that will have influence on your life in the very near future. And it's quite an interesting card. It has a huge amount of symbolism, and it represents tuning into your intuitive, metaphysical nature.
Oh, yes, how appropriate.
Yes, and I did not stack the deck.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And then there's four more cards that we lay out. So those cards are in the form of a cross, and then there's four more cards that we lay out that represent your fears, which is the King of Cups reversed, your family and friends, which is the Four of Cups reversed, your hopes, which interestingly enough is the Ten of Cups, which is a hugely great card, but it's in the reverse position. The Nine of Cups is considered the wish card, and if you get the wish card, it means whatever your desires are will come true. This is the card next to it, which is also a very good card, but it's in the reverse position. So you might be sabotaging yourself.
Reverse, you mean it's usually upside down? Is that the way it comes out?
Exactly. As you notice, I'm just flipping the cards over.
So you don't really go through the deck per se at the beginning of a reading and make sure they're all in one direction? However they end up is how they end up.
Exactly. However they end up is how they end up. And again, some people will read the card whether it's in the reverse or upright position in the same way.
Right.
I tend to read it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then the overall outcome is the reverse of the King of Swords. Now, I always find it interesting when a negative card or a not so great card or a positive card in the reverse position shows up in hopes. And I found for a long time that was happening with the readings I was doing on myself. And what I finally determined that represented is typically when someone is sabotaging themselves, when they really want something but they feel they don't deserve it, or they just can't seem to get to where they want to go. And a lot of that, when that comes up, is trusting yourself, trusting your own intuition, making yourself believe that you deserve good things. And that's typically what that means when something like this, the reverse Ten of Cups, would come up in your hopes position.
So in the bottom line, what does that mean then? I mean,
the bottom line in this case, I think, is...
I'm a mess, right? It's okay.
Not a mess. We don't want to ever put labels on ourselves because we speak things into existence. So you may have some challenges ahead of you. And I think they may be in regards to, again, Wands is a suit of business, so it may be in regards to trying to start this project up again, and a matter of trusting your intuition and trusting that you have what it takes to do it.
Okay. Now, generally speaking, how much do you charge for a reading?
It depends. If it's a quickie, usually a quickie, I'll give quickies out for free, depending on where I am.
Okay, so you're that type of reader, huh?
Yeah. Okay. But usually about $15, $15 to $25, depending on if I have to travel to someone's home or, you know, obviously with the cost of gas, that price might
change.
Yes,
right, yes.
Add an extra $10 onto that just for gas.
Yes, definitely. I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest today is Leslie Riznick. We're talking about tarot cards primarily, but Leslie also is a Reiki practitioner. Now, how often do you give readings again? Just whenever the opportunity strikes, basically?
I used to. The funny thing is I used to actually carry my cards in my purse with me, and I would... If somebody happened to say, oh, I just wanted to have my cards read, I would whip them out, you know, in the way I was taught. But it really depends. I did a senior lock-in for my nephew. I was on the decorations committee, and I was at the senior lock-in, and they were all freaking out because their psychic didn't come. And I said, my sister-in-law said, well, maybe Aunt Leslie has her cards with her. And I happened to have my cards with me, and I had a line down the entire hallway.
Right.
So.
She volunteered you. That was very nice of her, wasn't it?
Well, I enjoy it. I enjoy helping people in general, and I really enjoy doing readings. And people can challenge me, and I just smile and say, if you don't believe, that's fine.
Right. Now, has anybody ever come back to you saying that, well, you said this was going to happen and it didn't, or you said this was going to happen and it did, or, you know, they're upset about something?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That'll happen. That happens if you're a high-paid lawyer or or a doctor or a radio host.
Right. But again, I think people should understand that a lot of it is for entertainment value. Again, like you said, there's nothing set in concrete. That's what the potential is.
Right. It is entertainment, but I believe it's... Personally, I believe it's more than entertainment. And what people have to remember is the way the cards are laid out is not influenced by the person reading the cards. Mm-hmm. It's influenced by the person being read, which is why if someone comes in and they've been dragged in by a friend and they're just getting their cards read just to amuse their friend, just to have them shut their trap about getting their cards read, I don't get a good reading. Mm-hmm. When I do Reiki, sometimes I'll get messages. I do a little parlor game with a friend's daughter. I was over there last night when I should have been writing my notes for this program. And my friend's daughter said, can you do Reiki on us? In her case with the kids, it means I kind of read things on the kids and do a little, I'm an empath as well. So I can pick up things from people, and it's especially helpful when I do Reiki.
Mm-hmm. So you feel you do have a certain psychic ability?
I would hesitate to call it psychic ability. I think I have the ability to, I guess you could call it that, but I think I have the ability to really key in on people and to be able to understand them a little bit better than the typical person.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you must if you can really tap into what a person is really like or what their situation in life is. I know the book that you referred to earlier, it's well-worn, so it's something that is almost considered your Bible, perhaps, your own personal Bible?
Well, I wouldn't call it my Bible, but it certainly is my main reference for the tarot. There's another really wonderful book, a series of books by Conley. I don't remember the first name, but the last name of the author is Conley. I think it's a son and mother team. And the first book is called Apprenticeship of the Tarot, and it has some really great meditations and exercises to be able to get more familiar with the tarot deck and be able to get more into the tarot deck without having to refer to the book all the time. And I still carry the book typically, but I can do a reading with a standard deck of cards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know many people have done that, and they're accurate as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Once you learn it, you don't need the book. And once you learn how to really focus in and key in on the energy that surrounds the reading. And sometimes when I do a reading, if I'm having a tough time reading that person, I'll just put my hands over the cards, or I may take their hand in mine, and I get a little bit better sense of who they are.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer using the tarot cards, though?
For people that I don't know, especially, I can read people. I was at a wine tasting few weeks ago, and I just was able to read to people just by kind of putting my arm on theirs, and it was pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm. You mean you just literally touch people and you could divine what they were about?
Sometimes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not always.
Mm-hmm. Is that where the Reiki comes in?
Reiki certainly helps. As I said in the beginning of the program, anybody can do Reiki. Everybody is Reiki. Everybody has the potential to do it. Some people tend to be better at it. There are certainly people that are better at doing Reiki than I, that have different gifts. And I think we all have metaphysical gifts. And unfortunately, society and sometimes religion tells us that we don't have these things, or that they're bad, or that they're evil. And I certainly, if that's your religious belief, I respect that. Mm-hmm. I respect that. But if someone comes to me and says, yeah, I'm not sure if I believe in this, can you help me sort it out? I'm more than happy to sit down with them and talk with them and try to help them find where their path is, because not everybody's path is a tarot, not everybody's path is Reiki. And they're just things that happen to work for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I feel everybody is psychic to a certain degree. Again, like you said, maybe somebody's developed it to a higher degree than others. But again, I think we're all capable of divining something of the future anyway.
Absolutely. Not just the future, but being able to see beyond the facade that a lot of people put up. And as children, we are so open to these kinds of things. There's so many times that you hear a child says something that makes it pretty clear that someone who's recently deceased, a grandparent or something, or an aunt or what have you, has probably given them that information. And children are just so open, and we train them to deny those natural instincts because, you know, it's not right, or it's crazy, or whatever. And I think we need to recognize as children, and I think part of that is finding the play as adults, doing the play back and making time to just be, making time to play, making time to be spontaneous. And certainly children these days spend a lot of time not being spontaneous. They have their play dates planned. They have all their activities planned. And as children and as adults, we need to make sure we make time to do whatever it is that makes our hearts glad and makes our hearts sing, whether that's meditation or but just being quiet with oneself and really being able to key into who you are.
Right. You don't have to meditate per se or call it meditation, but like you said, just be quiet for half an hour a day and just think your own thoughts, and whatever comes to you might help you out.
And even 5 minutes a day can do it. And it can be something, if you're religious, it can be something like prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer is a form of meditation.
Right.
And even when it's repetitious, like the rosary, I think a lot of people find comfort in the rosary because it is repetitious and it is something that's more meditative than simply sitting down and talking with God. And I think that's one of the things that pushed me a little away from the traditional religion is I was told I had to use an intermediary to talk to God. And you know, I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that because I was a woman. So I think that's kind of some of the things that pushed me away from the traditional church. And I just felt I don't need to have a middleman to talk to God. I should just be able to talk to God directly.
Mm-hmm. So you're a bit of a rebel, is that it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My business cards for my web design business say the title is Chief Rabble Rouser.
Oh, really? Okay. That describes you, does it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think my friends would agree.
Okay. So basically, you work with computers. That's your real daytime job?
Right. My real daytime job. I'm a web designer and web developer, and I work for one of the universities, and I also have my own business.
And you enjoy that?
Absolutely. I do. I didn't get my degree in computers, but creative writing and focused on creative writing. But it is a form of creativity. Programming.
Oh, definitely.
I know it sounds... Even the programming is, and it's a form of logic. And when you're creative, you have some sort of logic, whether it's kind of crazy logic or whether it's structured logic. It's some form of logic.
Right. Well, that's the important thing, right? Logic?
Okay. Not necessarily.
Okay, you had to think about that, so
yeah.
I guess not.
It depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about making things work in a web browser, yeah, logic is very important. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about making your life exciting and worthwhile, sometimes, but not necessarily.
Right.
Got to have time for play.
Now, what is Reiki exactly?
Reiki is energy work. And it's a form of energy work. There's all kinds of different energy work. The hands-on healers that you see on these programs, whether they're bunk or whether they're actually real, practice some form of energy work. And Reiki has been thought for a while to be kind of like, you know, we don't know if this works. It's something only crazy people do. But in fact, the University of Michigan specifically has been doing a lot of research on Reiki. They're actually teaching Reiki to their nurses. And they've done some research in breast cancer patients. They've done research for post-surgical cardiac patients. And it's helped tremendously. And it's just... With Reiki, Reiki was developed back in, I think, the 20s, or it was founded in the 20s, and without getting into much detail, it's basically a way to realign your energy and your chakras. Chakra is more of an Indian term. It's not necessarily something that's associated specifically with Reiki, but most Reiki practitioners will refer to the chakras, the energy centers of your body. There's seven main energy centers in your body. And it's just rebalancing things and making yourself come back into focus. And disease is actually dis-ease.
Mm-hmm.
And as everyone can attest to, stress alone can make you sick.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this is a way, and if nothing else, if you don't believe in all that, if nothing else, Reiki is very relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people feel the energy right away. Some people never feel it. It took me 6 months to really be able to feel the energy from other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, how'd you get interested in that?
Well, that's another interesting story. It was actually 2001. And the beginning of the year, I kept seeing these classes for Reiki and Feldenkrais and just felt like, you know, I really needed to go to those classes and just didn't make the time. And on September 11th in 2001, I was working out near Renaissance Unity. At the time, it was Church of Today.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really felt the need to be there. And Deepak Chopra happened to be speaking that evening. And some friends of mine were going, and they couldn't make it until just before it was scheduled. So I said, well, I'll go over there, and I didn't have a ticket yet, but I said, I'll stand in line. I'll be at the front of the line. I'll make sure we get good seats. And I was there probably 45 minutes earlier or something like that, and the folks behind me, it was a big group, and they were talking about this Reiki, and they were doing some weird things with their hands, and I was by myself, so I struck up a conversation. What's that about? And it turned out that they were all Reiki practitioners, and they had what's called a Reiki share. every 2 weeks or once a month or what have you. So I started to go to that and started to learn about it. And before you knew it, I was taking classes, and I went through the three levels of classes and became a Reiki master.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a degree to show for it?
I have a certificate, but it's not, you know, it's not a formal degree. And frankly, the person who did my my classes no longer does it, so I don't know my lineage. In Reiki, you typically trace your lineage back to the founder of Reiki. But I don't know my lineage, so I'm going to take another class with somebody else so I can get my lineage.
Now, do you actually work on healing people yourself?
Yes. I mean, you hesitate to call it healing, obviously, for liability reasons. But I do energy work on I do energy work. And typically, I can't, if somebody comes to me and says, I have cancer, can you heal me? I will never, ever make a claim like that. But I can definitely say I will do my best to try to ease your pain, to try to give you strength, try to give you comfort. And pain is something that I'm pretty good, especially arthritic pain, sinuses. I can drain sinuses like that. And a lot of it, too, Reiki can address emotional pain. And one of the things with Reiki, any kind of energy work, when you do the energy work, many times you bring things out that were buried, emotional issues. I was doing Reiki on a gentleman one time that I didn't know, and I kept getting these images of explosions and war and things like that, and I didn't know the first thing about him, but later I was talking to him and found out he was a Vietnam vet who had just joined a support group and was just starting to deal with the things that he had seen and done over in Vietnam. So that was quite interesting.
Yes. Well, again, do you use it on yourself?
I can. I do occasionally, but I find that with the Reiki, it's typically works better if someone else does it on me.
So you say, though, that I guess more mainstream science and medicine is starting to use it?
Absolutely. Like I said, the University of Michigan has quite a few studies. A lot of medical schools are teaching it to their doctors now, and a lot of nursing schools are teaching it to their nurses. And it's really helpful in a patient environment. It's very calming for the patient. It can help relieve pain. And meditation in general, not just necessarily Reiki, but meditation in general can help with pain. There's a wonderful CD by Deepak Chopra called The Soul of Healing, and I used it after surgery when I was in a lot of pain, and it helped quite a bit when the Western medicine pain meds didn't kick in quite well enough.
Right, and you couldn't take the drugs constantly, so you had to do something, right?
Right, exactly.
Yes. Well, sometimes laughter can help too, can it? I mean,
absolutely.
As far as healing goes?
Absolutely. And that's kind of one of the things I was trying to get at too with the play. If we spend all our time being so focused on getting ahead in our careers and you know, making sure our kids are raised just right, well, yeah, you've got to be a parent, but a parent also needs to laugh with their children, and you need laughter to live. Unless you laugh, you're not truly living. You need to laugh, and you need to love, and you need to really do all the positive things in your life. And I think too many times we get so focused on the challenges that we have that it's hard to remember the great things we have in our life. And that's why I think one of the best things we can do for ourselves is to keep a gratitude journal. And I have another friend who I used to work with that every night at dinner, the family sits down and they tell each other what they appreciate. One thing that they saw, well, I thought it was really nice when you helped Deidre do the dishes, or, oops, now she'll know I'm talking about her.
Okay, the truth will out.
Yeah.
But again, it does help. Now, how can anybody get in touch with you if they want a reading or just to perhaps talk with you, whatever the case may be?
Well, I'll give you the phone number. It's 734-483-9585. Again, that's 734-483-9585. And I do have a website that I'm working on, and it's not up right now, but it'll be up probably within the week. It's goddessranch.com. G-O-D-D-E-S-S-R-A-N-C-H.com.
And that's named after you, correct?
Well, not necessarily.
The goddess part, right?
Not necessarily named after me. I believe, as we talked earlier, I believe that everyone has the goddess and the god within them, including men. Everybody has a feminine and a masculine aspect within
That's
themselves.
That's very true, yes.
And I think we need to recognize the god within ourselves to really be able to contribute to ourselves, our family, and the world. And that's where namaste comes from. I'm sure you've heard the word namaste.
No, but I bet you're going to explain it right now, right?
I sure will.
Okay.
Namaste is, I believe, a Hindu word that means I honor the God within you. And it's typically said with your hands folded in front of you, like in prayer, and you close your eyes and just do a short little bow to the person and say namaste. And it's a way of honoring the person that you're speaking to. It's typically a greeting used by many different people.
Okay. And once again, how much do you charge for a reading, generally speaking?
A reading between $15 and $20, typically, if I'm already somewhere, if I have to travel somewhere, or if I'm doing a party. Sometimes I'll do parties where I'll do so many readings, and it's anywhere between $15 to $25, $30, depending on how far I have to go and what type of reading I'm doing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I do appreciate it. And I learned a lot today, so thank you very much, Leslie.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Okay, well, thank you. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
To WHFR Dearborn.